Good morning. Today is Friday, August. Jeez, August is almost gone, isn't it? Last Friday of the month. That's August the 25th. Joining us this morning, not live from, but I guess escaped from,
sure.
The Woodley Island Marina Weather Station. How's that?
Got off the island for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of sounds like a reprieve, doesn't it? warning coordination meteorologist. Boy, that sounds fancy.
Yeah, well, it sounds fancy.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Ryan Aylward. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
So you're Troy Jr.?
Yeah, that would be a good
description.
Okay, yeah.
We'll go with that one. Our quote this morning, let's see if we can find, from some guy a long, long time ago, I'll just leave it there. We're never satisfied with ourselves. Okay, that's kind of a heavy one, but you know what? It might be appropriate for today considering all the events that are going on all around us, huh?
Yeah.
Holy Toledo. I guess if we can talk a little bit about what's going on up north first.
Sure.
Yeah. And then get into the hurricane and then the tsunami stuff that, pardon me, I did not have my Wheaties this morning. The tidal wave stuff.
down the
road. Yeah, I know. You have to say it your way. I feel an overwhelming compulsion to say it my way. Ryan, the weather patterns that are going on in southwestern Oregon, Curry County, Jackson County, Josephine County.
Yeah.
What is it that either helps a fire to be contained or hinders those efforts?
Well, the biggest thing is wind and RH, or relative humidity, as we say. So if the wind is really strong and it's really dry out, your fire is going to grow. If you don't have much wind and it's moist, if there's lots of moisture in the air, you know, the fire is not going to grow as easily. Problem with up there in Curry County, they get the Chetco effect, and when that offshore wind starts blowing, it's tough to stop a fire.
Now, an offshore wind, I think most people would go, oh, that means it's going from the ocean inland, bringing all the moisture. That should help and push it eastward.
Yeah.
Somewhere early on, somebody got too close to an electrical socket, I think, plugged themselves in, recircuited themselves, and everything's kind of cattywampus, and the references are a little bit different. Yeah, so
I never thought about that.
Let's explain it in normal guy terms, what you just said again.
Well, in our area, the wind is blowing from the east. When it's an offshore wind, so it's blowing toward the water. And we have mountains here. When wind or air descends down a mountain, it warms. So the conditions right now and coming up here in the next 24 hours, 48 hours up there, are again getting to that same sort of situation where we have that easterly wind coming down the valley, actually coming down the Chetco River, which is why they call it the Chetco effect, or the Brookings effect, because it goes right into Brookings. It's great sometimes of the year because it warms up their area. It can be 90 degrees in Brookings and 55 in Crescent City. But when there's a fire around, it's not a good thing. So that's the situation right now.
So if we want to get things right and pray for the right things, we want thick fog.
Thick fog, definitely.
That'll help things out.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter what the temperature is, let's say in Medford or in Grants Pass? Does that have any influence on the Chetco effect, or are they kind of independent?
Well, the hotter it is across the interior, the more likely you're going to have that Chetco effect. It's very similar to the Santa Ana winds in the south. Essentially the same process that's going on. It's just this funneling that comes down the valley there. And so the hotter it is across the interior, the more likely you're going to have that that wind going toward the coast during the overnights.
The wind is a natural byproduct of the temperature differentiation?
Yeah, it's the pressure difference, but it happens because of the temperature difference, yeah.
So what I've heard is that tonight at 7 o'clock, that seems to be a demarcation point. Last night at 7,
mm-hmm.
Okay, we made it through that one. Now we've got tonight at 7. What is magical about sunset? I know it's normally supposed to be cooling off at that point. Is that when things start to get stirred up?
It's just when the offshore flow really starts to kick in. It just has to do with
that easterly wind, right?
Yeah, that easterly wind. So As the atmosphere kind of settles a little bit, it becomes a little less turbulent, that the pressure fields, and now we're getting all technical here, but that starts to overwhelm the turbulence of the atmosphere that happened during the day when it heated up. And when that happens, it can just start to blow off offshore, blow toward the ocean from the east in around here. So
now, talking to the firemen, there is a different environment around a fire. It kind of develops its own challenges.
Yes.
Is that a compounding factor with what we're talking about, or is it just something that is part of what to anticipate?
It'll be a compounding factor, of course. Around any fire, it can develop its own weather because it's so hot. But typically that happens when you have a fire where there's very little wind around, but the temperatures are so warm and it's so unstable, the fire can just essentially blow up and start to create its own weather around that fire. And you can't really determine what's going to happen in that situation.
It really is a wild card at that point?
Yeah, it really becomes a wild card. And so people just have to step back and let it do its thing. In this case, we know where the wind is going to be coming from. We know what's going to be happening. So they know the fire is going to move toward the coast.
Now, there was a fire plume Sunday. Mm-hmm. You see just a vertical plume that took a lot of material up. Mm-hmm. Is that a terrain issue or is that a weather issue?
Could be both. It depends on the situation, yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time. Sorry, I'm going to take a second segment to talk about this one. It's 8:19. We'll be back.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika Thunder Country 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action all season long. Brought to you on KINS in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Ryan Elward from the Woodley Island Meteorologist NOAA Station in Humboldt Bay. I got it in there eventually, didn't I?
Yeah.
Good. Samoa Bridge. Yeah, okay.
We're out there.
Ryan, the Chetco effect and other things similar to that, how do you know what to anticipate? I mean, I know you guys get roasted over the coals about percentage of hits and misses with forecasts, but
yeah.
I mean, it is a science and there is a craft associated with it. How do you measure what's going on to anticipate for the fire that's going on? What to anticipate, when to anticipate? Is it just historical data or are there other things that come into play?
Yeah, I mean, historical data is one of the biggest ones, just knowing what has happened in the past. So if we're seeing some sort of atmospheric pattern that's happening that's similar to what's happened in the past, we can say, hey, yeah, this is probably going to be a bad day, or it's going to be a great day. Really depends on the situation. We have a lot of weather models that give us information on what to expect. And then on top of that, we have numerous weather stations out there. The Forest Service has installed a lot of ROS. They're just weather stations that are sitting on top of mountains. And those weather stations give us a lot of information.
Like at the communication towers, the EAS?
Yeah, nearby. Kind of stuff. There's one on Ship Mountain at the top of in Del Norte County. It's up at like 5,000 feet. So we have an idea of what the winds are doing up there. And that gives us an indication of what might be happening in other locations.
How are you got Emily, Mount Emily, you've got a number of buttes that are in the Curry County area. Is there one that's better than the others? Do you try to just get on as many as possible? Because I would think each drainage has its own unique characteristics and wind patterns and thermal layering and all blah, 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 blah. Do you need that many of them, or can you kind of go back? I'm really thinking is buoys,
yeah,
water, and mountaintops and air.
Yeah. Ideally, we would have one on every peak. That would be nice, because in every valley, because every valley does have its own weather. One valley, just depending on the orientation, might have wind from one direction, and the next one over might have wind the other direction. So it can be really confusing. That's what's nice about when they do have these big fires. They do send an incident meteorologist from the weather service. They actually goes to the fire camp and works with the firefighters to let them know, hey, this valley's going to have this type of wind, this valley's going to have that type of wind. Really helps them out.
So having somebody on site somebody who's knowledgeable that's on site?
Both. Yeah, okay. They have to know about fire and how fire behaves, and then also be right there talking with the firefighters.
From your perspective as a predictor,
mm-hmm.
is your interpretation often different than the firefighters who are working against this creature?
Well, I mean, we provide what the weather is going to be, and then there's a fire behavior analyst that provides what the fire will do to react to that weather. So they have both sides, and that person really knows fire behavior really well. We understand what the weather will be like around that fire. And it's a little detailed, but yeah.
So the two are partners.
They're working together in the same tent. They're working together, So they're a team.
Is that a desirable position?
Oh yeah.
I think it would be if you're an adrenaline junkie. Everything game on.
Well, it's a challenge.
If you're risk aversion,
yeah, well,
probably not the one you want to sign up for.
It's not for everybody, but it is a challenge, and so a lot of meteorologists want a challenge, and they want to go and help somebody that's trying to do something to help other people, and this is the pinnacle, is to be an incident meteorologist, to go out to a fire and help out the firefighters.
So with this particular scenario, do they then share that information? Does Troy get information from these folks, John over in Medford, so that either for communication purposes or just so that you guys are in the loop, you know what is going on, what to anticipate, when to anticipate, etc.?
Yeah, they definitely call and ask us questions about the, what we're expecting, so we're all on the same page. We have conference calls every morning with the incident meteorologists. There are multiple ones around the area right now because we have so many fires. And then we also talk with the Forest Service. They have meteorologists as well. So we're all on the same page. We know what to expect. And then the incident meteorologists at the fires can then take that information and say, this is what's going to be specific to this fire, and this is what you, the firefighters, need to know about.
So you guys are updated on the information loop on this.
Yeah,
as
constantly.
Well.
Yeah.
So what's your sense?
For the Chetco?
For the weekend, yeah, for the Chetco bank fire.
It's that offshore Chetco effect that's going to happen. And it all depends on what's, the fire lines that have been built and everything. They've had, a little while to try to, harden those. But there is a point when the wind becomes too strong, and even a really strong, because embers can go into the air and they can fly a mile out ahead of the fire. So at some point you can't really stop it, and so they're just going to do their best.
Are you at the finger crossing stage, or what?
I don't know. You'd have to speak to the Medford office and see what they're thinking up there, because that's their forecast.
Yeah, I know. So their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Yet again, we're in one of those weird things where it makes more sense for Troy and your guys' office to handle the coast.
Yeah.
Rather than having Lovegrove and his guys out of Medford deal with something.
But the nice thing is, Lovegrove, he did work here.
Yeah, I know.
Office, so, yeah.
Every once in a while, you try to catch a break, and then you make sure that you nail his feet down so he can't go anywhere. Okay. Figuratively, nail his feet down. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Ryan Elward from the Woodley Island Marina Weather Station. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redeck. Troy hasn't called yet. I guess you're doing okay, huh?
I guess so. Or just.
Or maybe by leaving the phone out in the lobby that kind of helped.
That helped, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit, Ryan, now about the hurricane, the concept of hurricane, the hurricane season. Mm-hmm. What's surges, all that kind of stuff, because you know we're fairly insulated here unless we are transplants from somewhere else. Hurricanes and tornadoes are these things you see on TV, kind of like earthquakes are for folks in the other part of the country if they've not experienced it.
Well, yeah, if you talk to someone from the Midwest, well, I'm originally from the Midwest, it was, it's like a tornado, yeah, we know that's coming, right? And earthquake, they just happen suddenly, so it's scary. An earthquake is scary, but here it's the opposite.
Oh, man, there is no way in the world I would ever trade an earthquake for any of the other natural disasters.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you prepare, it happens, you take care of it. You know, you give me... and the tidal waves, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. That was the most disconcerting thing in the world. It's coming. It's coming.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
It's waiting. Coming. It'll be here. 20 hours, it'll be... You know, so you get the adrenaline rush initially, and then it comes down, and then the thing kind of sneaks up on folks. Are hurricanes similar to that?
Well, they need a lot of time to evacuate coastlines. So 48 hours to really get people out in some places, and Houston would probably need even more. Having the lead time is basically saying, hey, this storm's coming in 2 days, is really important for them.
So where do you go for a hurricane?
Inland.
just
get away. Get away from the coast. Stay away from lowland areas. This hurricane right now, Hurricane Harvey, is supposed to bring 3 feet of rain to the interior of Texas there, downing on the southeast area of Texas.
And they're not used to getting... Well,
that's a
they
lot
must
of rain.
Be used to getting rain because they're in a hurricane area.
Yeah.
But
we could.
They don't have the gradient like we have with it
all
drain off.
Even if we got 3 feet of rain in across... Everywhere. I mean, it's like it's just going to be everywhere. We get it in the mountains, you know, and the coast then doesn't get as much rain. It would flood. So, I mean, they have a very dry area. It's just there's nothing to really absorb the water like we have here.
Isn't that the most bizarre thing? We were in Vegas a couple years ago. 2 inches of rain. 2 inches. Come on.
And boy, flooding everywhere.
Was that significant? Yeah, because the ground gets so baked, it doesn't absorb.
Right. It doesn't absorb. It just runs off.
Texas similar to that, or do they get enough of the hurricanes where it can actually seep in as well as run down?
I mean, it's better than Vegas.
Okay, fair enough.
But they do have very long dry periods in Texas. So, you know, they go through periods where the ground can harden up. I don't think it's been particularly wet yet right in that area this year, but it doesn't matter. Once you get 3 feet of rain, it doesn't matter. That's a lot of rain.
So is a hurricane a wet tornado?
No, it kind of seems like it, but tornadoes are actually even stronger in a very localized area. They can have winds, you know, over 200, up to 200 miles an hour.
The funnel.
Yeah, right in the tornado. While a hurricane, it's broader. It's very large, so it has a wind field that goes over a big area. And it's not as strong. It may only be 100, I think it's 110 miles per hour, the current strength, and I think forecast to reach 125. But it's happening over such a big area, it happens for such a long period of time that, you know, buildings just eventually just can't take it. And so they'll give in. And then on top of that, they have the storm surge on the coast and then all that rain. So they're going to have a lot of issues down there. I know that, you know, state of emergencies have already been declared. So they're
too bad
they're
we
can
get about 6-8 inches of that up here, huh?
Yeah, we have put it on the fires.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it just doesn't happen that way. We get all this rain in the winter, and then it just dries out. And
so there's the term eye of the hurricane.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a calmness.
Oh, yeah.
Why isn't that where chaos is most significant?
There's just a lot of descending air. So, you know, we talked about earlier the descending air that comes down off a mountain, and it warms. So there's actually really warm air right in the middle, and it's really humid, and all the wind is circulating around, and yeah, it can be really calm right there in the center. It's there are hurricane chasers out there, just like tornado chasers.
There are people that jump off buildings attached to a rubber band too.
They do all sorts of
things. Kind of all the same mentality there.
Their goal is to get in that eye because they want to experience that that still environment that's in there. But I would not recommend it.
No.
Don't even try.
The price to get there is way
right,
too high.
You have to go through a lot of bad weather to get into that situation.
So from a meteorological perspective, is a hurricane a normal or is it abnormal event?
Oh, very normal. It's basically the Earth trying to counterbalance all the heat that's in the tropics, you know, around the equator, and move that heat north. And so it puts it all into moisture and a storm, because water holds a lot more heat than just dry air, puts it into that storm, creates something that's sadly really strong and dangerous, and sends it north. And so that's why, you know, it's coming out of the Gulf and going toward Texas. It's moving north. It's just trying to counterbalance all that heat.
Being as American-centric as our media is, mm-hmm. we hear about this stuff.
Yeah, this one, yeah.
Does it happen in the Mediterranean?
They don't really get them in the Mediterranean. I don't know if the water temperature just might not be warm enough. I think every now and then they get something that looks tropical, but it happens more in like the Atlantic and
Pacific. And it doesn't happen in the Southern Hemisphere?
It happens in the Southern Hemisphere,
too. We just don't hear about it.
We just don't hear about it as often. But you'll hear about things hitting Australia. You know?
Yeah, and Malaysia sometimes. Philippines.
Yeah, all through there. Yeah, they get those type of storms.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Ryan Elward from the, what is it, Humboldt office?
Well,
is
it's NOAA's National Weather Service, Eureka office.
Eureka, it's still Eureka, even though you're not in.
Well, we're in Eureka.
Yeah, I know, but when you're in the post office, at least it made more sense. we've got earthquakes in our area, we've got tidal waves in our area, we've got things that we see as normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it just happens. Well, yeah, there's an earthquake somewhere. You don't run down to the ocean to see how many fish are out of the water. Duh.
No.
But it still seems to be one of the same thing with floods. Well, let's go down and look at Fernbridge. No. I mean, you know, people's lives are being impacted, there's safety issues, now you want to just compound the screwiness. No, I mean, get normal. With events like either a king tide or any of the other activities that happen along the beaches and in the waterways, is that the biggest concern you guys have, is that we're going to have the looky-loos running down, putting themselves in danger?
Well, there are always people that want to see, you know, what's going on, and you know, it is a concern when people go and check things out and they get too close. So one of our biggest things, like we let people know the big waves are coming, you know, like just regular storm waves, and they're going to be huge and they're going to look cool. And so we understand people want to go take pictures and check it out. But we just try to emphasize, stay way back. If you're going to be going down there, don't get anywhere close to the waves, because
long range.
Yeah,
lenses.
Get a long range. Yeah, long range lens. Yeah, because you don't know how big the next wave's going to be. You just don't know. And so the same thing happens with other things. You know, tsunamis. It's the same stuff. the first wave's not the biggest. Could be the third, could be the fifth, could be the tenth. You just don't know. And then it lasts for a long period of time, so it can be tricky. So there's a lot of things that, you know, you just don't want to be too close to any of this stuff.
Is that the primary function of the exercise?
Yeah.
Is to get the community to kind of remember, don't be stupid. Yeah, I mean, I know there's the media coordination part, but don't put yourself into a position where you really are doing some things that you really don't want to do.
Well, the test and then the shakeout drill that this year is going to be happening the next day. We're going to do the official tsunami
warning. Do them both. Yeah.
Right. Well, we're going to do the normal tsunami warning communication test that we used to do in March this year in October on the 18th between 11 a.m. and noon. And then the next day is going to be the shakeout drill. Both of those things are about trying to make sure the community is prepared and ready, knows where the tsunami zones are, knows how the emergency system is going to work, and then knows how to react to an earthquake by itself, you know, drop, cover, hold on. So that's
just
what
like
these
school
two things
you used to teach us, right?
Just like in school, yep.
Yeah, duck, roll, and pray, I think is
Well, yeah, I think that was for something else.
Yeah, okay. And I'm sure we'll have more information about that as we get closer.
Oh, definitely.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thank you.
See everybody on Monday.